Blog Talk Radio.
I'm a soldier for life. The battle I'm fighting has no ending. To struggle is to go the distance. To win is not to care how far one must go.
How you feel?
Fine, sir.
How you feel?
Fine, sir.
How do we get access to this, Jackson?
His lawyers say they can get me in posing as a legal investigator.
You were Newton's lawyer.
Yes.
And now, Mr. Jackson.
Mr. Jackson was sentenced 1 year to life for a $70 gas station robbery.
We have 2 hours.
Waiting a long time.
We need brothers who can maintain their self-respect in here, have true strength.
Some people are comparing you to Eldridge Cleaver, Richard Wright, Du Bois. How does your fame affect you when you're locked up all day?
Free the Soledad brothers!
Free the Soledad brothers!
Do you understand that there cannot be a peaceful revolution?
Okay, gentlemen, we're taking over.
Mr. Jackson,
sorry about your brother.
They will live to regret it. I'll see you today.
Don't go dead on
you. Yeah, my hurts.
Starring Gary Dorden from DVCSI.
This is the
show, baby.
Good
evening. Welcome to another edition of George Jackson University Radio. I'm your co-host, Brother Jonaku. And I'm also joined with my fellow co-host, Romani Shakur.
Hi.
We have a really, really informative, exciting show to you this evening. We have none other than David Hiller, former member of the Black Panther Party. And he has a wonderful story to share with us. Before we bring on our guests, I usually go over some Black history facts right about this time. But lately, I've been in my Andy Rooney mode. It's like when he would do a summary or something up on 60 Minutes. And I'm kind of going to do that today. What I want to say is, in brief, you know, a lot of times, and this kind of bothers me, that as African-American people, we are so emotional and reactive to stuff. I shouldn't make it a blanket statement. Like, I'm talking in general. I know everybody's not like that. But what I'm saying is, I remember when Mugabe was ousted, and you know, a lot of people was up there, you know, showing support for Mugabe, this and that. And I'm not really here to down Mugabe, but after doing some research, I learned, I've gotten this from one credible source, like Afro Courts Weekly, you know, a pretty solid source. At least some of the writers on there are pretty solid. And this one writer did a story where he interviewed African Americans who were assigned to work over in the embassy, and the brother was saying how bad they were treated. He said, you know, Mugabe and his cabinet would use racial slurs that whites in America don't even use anymore. Saying anytime anything went wrong, it was blamed on African American. Now I know this could be more to the story than like that, but it just kind of makes you think how we want to support some people without really getting the history on them. I know Mugabe was everybody like, oh yeah, Mugabe threw out the white farmers. That was cool. But look what happens when he gets ousted. They're right back in there. And that's partially his fault. Because if you're really going to do something after you throw the whites out, even if you didn't have to throw them out, even if you didn't throw them out, if he had used some of the millions and millions of dollars of the riches that he hoarded and invited people, Africans from all over Africa, as well as the diaspora from Jamaica, Haiti, the United States, and everywhere else to come to Zimbabwe, set up farms. He gave scholarships to Africans in this country to go around the world and study farming. There would be no room for the whites to come in back in to exploit. So yeah, it was kind of an emotional thing. Yeah, we got rid of the white farmers. All right, but you still didn't do anything that helped the African farmers who were there. So as soon as he's out the way, they come right back marching in. And the Africans were cheering and cheerleading around them because they were left open to exploitation. That's kind of the same thing here in America. People talk about, yeah, let's get rid of the Korean business. We should bomb this door. We should run out the community. Yeah, okay, that may be fine and good. But if the power brokers in our communities, these churches, these fraternal organizations will open up businesses, there will be no room for the Koreans or the Arabs to come in our community. You see, they don't come in anybody else's community. Everybody else got their community on lock, except us. So I'm not going to, you know, stay too much on my soapbox. I got just something that had been bothering me, and I wasn't on last week to discuss it. So at this time, I'm going to pass it over to my fellow co-host, Brother Bomani Shakur, to take it from here. You on with us, good bro? Brother Bomani, you on? Let me see what's going on here. Okay, Brother Bomani, if you're online, your microphone is open. Okay, well, you know, we might be having some technical difficulties with Brother Bomani's microphone, so I'm going to, you know, just kind of keep things going for a minute. Okay, Brother Bomani, is your mic open? Okay, I think we have just a little bit of technical difficulty with the guest line keep dropping off. So please, if you're out there listening to the audience, please bear with us while we get this situation resolved. Okay, so in the meantime, is that you, Brother Bomani? So in the meantime, what I guess I will go ahead and do, I'll take a few moments to read over some notable events related to African history that occurred this day. Okay, February 5th, 1885, the devil incarnate, King Leopold II, established Congo as a personal possession. 2004, rebels from the Revolutionary Arabi Resistance Front captured the cities of Joinville, starting the 2004 Haitian Rebellion. February 6, 1820, first organized immigration of new Africans back to Africa, New York to Sierra Leone. 1820, first 86 new African immigrants sponsored by the American colonization, sorry, settlement in present-day Liberia. 1926, second week in February, Negro History Week, observed for the first time. It was started by historian Carter G. Woodson, an association for study of Negro life and history. 8 ASALH's official mission is to promote, research, preserve, interpret, and disseminate information about Black life, history, and culture to the global community. In 1976, Negro History Week became Black History Month. 1945, the birth of Bob Marley. 1956, you there, Brother Bomani?
No, that was Brother Gaidi of Janaku. Excuse me, when you said Bob name, I just said Rastafari.
Brother Gaidi, that's you, brother?
Yes, sir. How you doing, African?
Oh, I'm good, African. It's good to hear your voice. I haven't heard you in a while. Excellent to hear your voice, brother.
Oh, yes, sir. You know, sometimes that clandestine function is the most profitable and the most, applicable given the struggle. So I've just been ducked away in them Tora Bora Mountains for a little while, but I'm still with the people in struggle always.
No, I hear you, brother. I understand that fully. So how's things been going where you at?
Oh, you know, everything
is
going good, brother.
Studies of Black history going on in the month of February?
Well, you know, I'm definitely doing my part to spread word to the brothers and opening up dialogue, you know, continually trying to work with some of these young Africans that sectioned off in these tribes of Bloods and Crips and get them to interact on a more harmonious level with each other, you know what I mean? So, you know, the works is always every day Black History Month for the new African. You know that, brother.
Okay, that's what's up, brother.
Yeah,
we were waiting on supposed to be having Comrade David Hilliard on the line this evening, but there's something going on at his end where the brother keeps dropping off the line. So, not sure. So hopefully he's gone within the next few minutes because it's supposed to be a really informative show. I was looking forward to it.
Oh yeah, absolutely, absolutely. You know, I had to tune in for the brother. I definitely wanted to hear him. You know.
Right. No doubt. No doubt. Okay, so we're going to give it a couple more minutes, and then we may just have to move to something else in the meantime. Okay, Mama Connie, are you there, fellow co-host?
Yes, I am. How are you this evening?
I'm doing well. So as you probably heard, there's a little bit of technical stuff going on with our guests, but as you know, as we Africans, we got to keep things moving. So anything on your mind that you'd like to, some words of wisdom you'd like to give us in the time being?
Well, one, I wanted to ask where you finished with the presentation of things happening this week in Black history. Were you finished with that?
Yeah, I'm done.
You were? Okay.
Yeah.
My next thought, at the end of March, I think it's March 29th to April 1st, is New African Nation Day, the year's anniversary of the Republic of New Africa. This year, we're going back to Detroit, Michigan, where it first began. 500 sisters and brothers declared ourselves sovereign and independent. And with that celebration of 50 years is going to happen in March in Detroit, Michigan. I also, the 1968 Black Power Conference that took place at the Church of the Advocate, 18th and Diamond in Philadelphia, I attended that.
Wow.
And that has a 50-year anniversary this month as well. Just a few little tidbits to share.
Okay. Now, I've heard of New African, I heard of that day. Can you share a little bit more light on that? I mean, is it tied to the Republic of New Africa, or are the two things two separate?
No, they're one thing. The Republic of New Africa was founded in Detroit.
Okay.
And 50 years ago. And so New African Nation Day celebrates the day that brothers and sisters got together and declared ourselves independent and sovereign. So they're certainly connected. I'm also working on the New African Nation Day Planning Committee, and we're coming along. It's going to happen. And we're scheduled for a mock dry run in 2 weeks, so everything should either be in place or not.
Okay. So now, who are some of those founders of the, who you said 50 years ago when things were established, who were some of those founders who were there breaking ground?
Elder Brother Imari Abubakar Yobadele, who was the president right after Robert Williams. And let's see, Queen Mother Moore was there. She signed. I'm told that Ron Karinga, the creator of Kawaida, Kwanzaa, and the US organization, that he was present and signed. I was not there. I've only been a conscious citizen of the Provisional Government Republic of New Africa 49 of the 50 years of its existence.
Okay.
That gives you some idea.
So is New African Independence Day, is that something that's been celebrated locally? I remember hearing of it, But now I've never attended any ceremony for it. So is it just a Detroit where it's only held in Detroit, or is it kind of, you know, across the country?
Well, there are a lot of conscious citizens who celebrate locally where they live, but the national New African Nation Day celebration is going to be in Detroit where it first began. That's how we're honoring the 50th anniversary.
Oh, all right.
50
all right.
years, that's not bad. Not as long as the Garvey Nation, because they established themselves in 1920.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
But is it kind of safe to say, like, Garvey, still in a way, gave birth to the new independence? Well, he laid, at least laid the groundwork for the new African independence?
I'd say he was a significant part.
Right.
Because there were a lot of things going on at that time. His was the largest movement. I mean, Garvey back then did a million woman and a million man march just locally in
okay.
New York.
Wow.
So he managed to do a lot of things. In August, he did, in August of 1920, he had the plebiscite. And there was no facility large enough to take in the 24,000 black people that showed up to sign for the plebiscite. So what he did was he rented a facility that would hold 8,000 people. He let 8,000 black people in, then let them out, let in 8,000 more, let them out, and then let in the last 8,000. That's how he got all them signatures on the same day. He, Garveyites also constructed their Constitution, their Declaration of Independence. And just for the record, the Garvey Nation has more than 20 embassies around the country. I think that's, I mean, around the world. I think that's amazing. Especially for that period of time, they didn't have internet and cell phones and
right, I was just
going to
say
technology.
That.
Technology, isn't that amazing?
Exactly. That I was just thinking that same thought. How he was able to do so much. There wasn't no blog, like you said. Wasn't no internet, no Facebook, no blog talk radio. Like you said no cell phones. Barely had home phones back in those days. And he had the mass movement. And today with y'all's technology, someone calls a meeting, it'd be like 2 or 3 people there. You know what I'm saying? It's just amazing.
Mm-hmm.
And the same thing with Elijah Muhammad. Look what he did way back in the day, all the black-owned businesses and farms he had. And now today, it's like you hard pressed. You know, you walk through any black community in America, and you probably can count, besides the barbershop, you can number on one hand of the black-owned businesses that are there. You know, it's just like, wow. You know, it's just fascinating. It seems that, you know, you would think back then, With all the stuff we have today, we'll be in a better place. But it seems like we're going backwards in a sense. You know what I mean? I mean, you know, you ask someone about the movement today, you know, people too busy on Facebook watching reality TV. But back then, people got involved. Like you said, 24,000 people showed up. I mean, 24,000 people. I mean, just to get that done, I mean, they had to be doing some serious word of mouth, some serious letter writing and pounding the pavement. I mean, that's just phenomenal. I mean, 24,000 people back in that day is like getting 100,000 people together today.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just like,
exactly.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
Exactly. I became a Garveyite when I was 12 years old.
Okay.
I walked over to what's now known as Cecil B. Moore Boulevard in Philadelphia, still Philadelphia. And back then, it was Columbia Avenue. And the nearest office to my home where I live was about 5 blocks. And the Black Panther Party, they were right around the corner from me, their office. And so were the Moors. They were right around the corner. So I grew up in an environment where I was able to join everything that was going on.
Mm-hmm. Now, let me ask you a question real quick. Now, when you say Moors, are you referring to Moors as in like the Moors Science Temple, or are you referring to the Ouachita Moors? Because until recently, I didn't know they were two different groups.
They actually are not different at all.
Really?
It's like, let me see if I can give a good example. It's like Nigeria and Ghana.
Okay.
And Nigeria, in Yoruba language, in the Ifa system, they call the Most High Olodumare. And let's say in Ghana, in Fi language, they call the Most High Inyame. They're not different.
Okay.
They both have an ancestral system. They both have a Most High. They both have oracles that they use when your ears don't work and you can't hear the voice of the Most High. They both have, you know, African clothing and African everything. But yet, they're different while they are the same. But the bottom line is, they both, you know the Most High. The Moors are similar to that example because I knew about the Moors Noble Drew Ali. I studied with some elders. They didn't focus on, you know, the Moors Science Temple, Noble Drew Ali. They focused on, you know, the spirituality of it. That's what they taught us, young people who used to hang out at their bookstore. And they would teach us, you know, help us with learning how to think. So they would let us young people come to the store, read books that we certainly couldn't afford to buy. And they play chess with us. And when we won, we could pick any book we wanted in the store because we won, and that was how we paid for the book.
Okay.
That's how they taught us. Then when I moved to Ohio 32 years ago, now I'm in the Ouachita Moor territories because the entire illegal Louisiana Purchase is Ouachita Moor lands. So I got to know more about the Ouachita Moors. I got a chance to meet and interact with Empress Vertice, who ironically is from Louisiana, which is the capital of Ouachita Moor Territory, but it's also the home of Queen Mother Moor.
Right.
And the PGRNA that claims the five states in the Black Belt South as our territory, of which Louisiana is one. So I'm actually looking forward to sitting in the sessions where the PGRNA and the Ouachita Moors discuss the shared territory.
Okay.
The PGRNA does have treaties with Cuba. We have treaties with AIM, American Indian Movement. And we have treaties with Libya. I'm looking forward to seeing what a treaty with the Ouachita Moors might look like.
Okay.
That's going to be an interesting time in history, in our story.
That most definitely will be.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. I like being in the background doing the work, you know. I really enjoy that part, being on these committees and in these governmental structures and organizations that, you know, get the work done. I like that. Help move our people forward.
Okay. Well, now, Mom, kind of, I've known you like at least about 2 or 3 years now. And in the time that I've known you, you've never been one to really bite your tongue. So I want to pose a question to you, if I may, and it's probably a little bit controversial. Okay. All right. Well, you know, now, as I was listening to you list like some of the founders of New African Independence Day and the provisional government, all the names that I heard were Africans. Now, I know other movements such as the NAACP, they're a kind of like integrationist movement. And I'm not a member of any of these organizations, but, you know, I'm around. I attend meetings, you know, lend support where I can. And I've been hearing whispers of some of these different groups, even the provisional government, as far as bringing non-Africans in, specifically Europeans. What is your thought on that type of thing?
Well, 50 years ago, when the 500 brothers and sisters got together and declared our independence and sovereignty, there were no Europeans, and I'm being generous, present. There were no white, genetically recessive trait persons present. There were no crackers present. So I'm enigmatized now in the more modern times when white people are present. I've attended some PCCs, People Center Council sessions. White people were present. That enigmatized me. I'm blind now. So I had to be told that there was white people, though the person was allowed to speak. And I could hear that they were a melanin genetic recessive being. And I just have real problems. When I questioned it and challenged it, and that's not the only time, but when I questioned it and challenged it, I was told, well, sister, you need to study your history, because if you look at it, some of the political prisoners that are out wouldn't be out if it wasn't for white people helping them to get out. And I said, well, nobody white helped me, and even if they had, you know, opening the gates to my garden, my heaven, you know, him getting the stick, his white stick inside me would not have been a reward. So I don't understand why a white girl, when she helps a brother get out of prison, you know, he somehow feels obligated to allow her to jump up and down on his stick. I don't get that.
Okay.
I don't see how the reward matches the work. She's doing what she's supposed to do. She's supposed to help them, you know, and she's not helping sisters. It's 13 sisters to every brother. Why on earth would a sister need to share a brother with a white girl? That's the most absurd thing I've ever heard. We struggling to share between us and help us heal our wounds and survive. So why on earth would we share our womb, our brothers with white girls' womb? It makes no sense.
Okay.
It's just like, okay, with the word woman versus the word female. You know, white people trick us with their language. But one of the things I learned coming up with the Moors was that female, when you Moorish wordship it, is pre-male. White girls ain't pre-nothing. But they took the word female and claimed it, and so the sisters have taken woman for womanists when they're talking about our movement. Wrong. It's reverse. Woman is a white girl with a womb. She's a man with a womb. Womb man. And for us, we are female. Pre-male. We came before everybody. including our own males. Now that's a piece that the Moors taught us when we were young. You know, we were preteens, and they were teaching us and helping us with this language, because this is a tricky ass language, this English crap.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
How's that for not biting my tongue?
You didn't let me down, Mama. I knew you'd bring it. Give us the real. I knew you would.
How are we doing with getting our brother David on?
You know, I still haven't heard anything from my fellow co. I know Bomani is on the line, and he texted me that the brother kept dropping off because he was calling in through Bomani's line. So I'm not sure what's going on with the comrade. But
as you know, I have a 6,000 book in-home library, and Brother David's book, can't remember the title. Like I said, I've been blind for a couple of years. Uh-huh. And I have his book in my library. I have a section for Black Panther authors, and his book is there along with Elaine Brown's book, Asada's book, Huey's book, Eldridge's book, and a host of other brothers and sisters who are Black Panther, either original or other areas in the country.
Hey, Brother Bomani, you on the line with us? Okay. Now, I said see him online, but I guess he's still trying to reach out to Brother Hilliard. Well, everybody listening to audience, you know, I really apologize on behalf of George Boot Jackson University for this minor hang-up. I know a lot of you probably, as I did, were real excited to hear the comrade tell his story and be able to ask him questions. So hopefully, before the close of the show, the comrade will be on. I said I really apologize for this minor hang-up. I'm not sure what's going on with the brother. As I said, my fellow co-host, Brother Bomani, was on the line with the brother. Then he told me the brother kept dropping off the line about three different times. So I'm not sure there's an issue with his phone or something unexpectedly came up with him, as it sometimes does. But please, hang tight. And hopefully the comrade will be on, because I know I was really excited to have a chance to listen and pose questions to the brother as well.
Me too. I hadn't communicated with him. It's been, goodness gracious, a lot of years.
Right.
So
right.
I was looking forward to hearing him, after all these years.
Exactly. So, Mama Condi, so what else? Because that was a really good piece of information about the new African Independence Day. What else is going on or is coming up that the people may want to keep their ear out for?
Well, as I said, I'm very active in the government, in the RNA, and there is a unit of sisters who are working together. Actually, we're multi-district, which is not usually something that happens, but we decided to set our unit up as a multi-district. And in doing so, we're out of Cincinnati, Ohio, Olentangy, Ouachita, misnomered Columbus, Ohio, and out of Ida B. Wells, Tennessee, Memphis. And here's what we're doing as the Ministry of Health. We've recently opened and have just paid our third month's rent on our health center. Yay, yay, yay.
Right.
Herbal, homeopathic, and all natural and African health care.
Okay.
We're doing all kinds of things there. And both mental and psychological healing as well as physical and emotional. We're also hosting in July a vegan food festival. And we sisters have been putting our funds together to make all these things happen. We're also starting this coming Monday, we'll be having a phone conference, a couple hours every Monday in the evening, so that brothers and sisters can call in. And we're working on the schedule. We want to have two sessions a month that are both brothers and sisters at the same time. And then 1 week will be just sisters, and 1 week will be just brothers. So okay. Monday will be the first time. We've also got a website set up so people can see what it is that we are doing and be able to tap in, tune in, call in. We also will do both physical in the clinic sessions with people, and for people who cannot come to the physical location, we'll be willing to do consultations by phone and by internet chat.
Okay.
Those we're working out how that will manifest, but I can say one thing. If it is a brother or sister who cannot afford to pay cash, and we do have a PayPal account, and we have another account as well that people can pay for the services we provide, should happen that a brother or sister cannot afford to pay us, then here's how we see that. Here's an example. Let's say I can't afford to pay, right?
Okay.
So I would be obligated to buy a composition book and a pencil. And I would have to write my name, my phone number, the city and state where I was born, my age, my date and time of birth, my health history, like if I've had any surgeries or what illnesses I may be carrying right now, any medications I'm taking, any herbs I'm taking. And then it becomes a 30-day journal. And whatever you put in your mouth, no matter how small it is, it could be a Tic Tac. If it has ingredients, you write it down. Don't want to write all that stuff down? Don't put it in your mouth. You would also, for me, have to include in your journal your everyday excretions, like your urine. Does it have an odor? Is it yellow? Is it cloudy? Is it clear? Does it have little parasites swimming around in it? Same thing with your bowel movement. How many times a day, you know, the aroma, is it a log? Is it a brick? Does it sink? Does it swim? Does it float? Does it have creatures crawling around in it? This is how I diagnose. There are four of us sisters working together in the clinic. But for me, that's how I would diagnose, and that's how you would pay.
Okay.
Because you'd have to put out the effort and the energy.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We're different. But we're building the Ministry of Health in the Provisional Government Republic of New Africa.
Oh, okay. So this clinic is an extension of the university. Is a work of the university. I'm sorry, not the university. It's the work of the provisional government?
Well, this way. We put up the money.
Okay.
We're paying the bills out of our pocket. The government doesn't have any money invested in what we're doing. But because we're all on the Ministry of Health Committee, we give credit to that committee and our work in that committee.
Okay.
And one of us is the chairperson of that committee. And we all work well together, so it's a good thing. I can't say to what extent it might change if someone else was the head of the committee. We would continue to do what we do as workers, you know, in the government, but we wouldn't give what we do to anybody outside of us as a collective because they don't have any money invested. They haven't done the research. They haven't labored. They don't have the history, you know. And they would have to do the work to even be considered in the work that we're doing.
Okay.
So because we're conscious citizens, there is credit there. But because we the ones carrying the entire weight, you know, for example, we put up the $2,000+ to rent the space for the Vegan Food Festival. It would be really enigmatizing for someone else to come along and say, oh, well, y'all need to do this, you should do that, you should do this, and you should give us the money that you make. And no. I would have to ask, on what planet do they do that? So there's a small line. There's a small line. As long as the work is done, that's the main point.
Really, that.
And that's what we're doing. That's what we're doing.
Okay.
I will say this. Committee, we're struggling because the museum where the New African Nation Day celebration is going to take place has a policy that allows white people. So I do have I am struggling with that.
Okay.
I admit that I'm struggling with that. I've co-founded 5 independent African center schools, K-12, and co-authored the curriculum K-12. African center. So I don't see why I would share any of that with little white children. And from the research we did, we found it's almost 50-50 white people attending the museum and black people attending the museum. And I figure where there are white people, there are white children. And I know I had to stand on principle, even if I had to stand alone, but there are some others who are standing with me. But I initially said, if there's going to be white people and it's in their policy, and then I can't do it. I won't do it. I will not teach white children what belongs to black children. I won't do it. What's the point of developing independent? Is that them?
Okay.
Oh, I thought maybe that might have been them.
No. That was just Bomani telling me he's still trying to reach out to Brother Hood.
Oh, bless his heart. Okay. Well, you know how that go. They always trying to block whatever we're doing. There's no surprise there.
I just saw something interesting. I guess I'll share this. I was reading on Yahoo, just flipping through things real quick, talk, and it says, headline, DNA suggests 10,000-year-old British skeleton had dark skin and blue eyes. And they talked about, they said Allen's indicates he had blue eyes, dark curly hair, and dark to black skin pigmentation. They said researchers say this evidence suggests that Europeans' pale skin tone developed much later than originally thought. You know, I just kind of brings me back to when people try to deny, to tell us that all Africans, well, black people are a subspecies, or, you know, all that nonsense these white supremacists talk. And scientists is constantly confirming that, you know, originally people were, did evolve, you know, become. I'm getting tongue-tied here, that people originally came first in Africa, then from there they spread out to the rest of the world, and over time, their skins got lighter, but originally people were dark-complected people. So,
well, we can go back even further than that.
Mm-hmm.
There was a time, and the Moors talk about this a lot, there was a time when there were no continents. It was just one huge, large landmass.
Exactly.
The only people on the planet at that time was us.
Right.
There wasn't anybody else. And a brother named Yaqub is credited with blowing up blowing up the planet because everything was so spiritual, he got bored. And so him and some of the people with him migrated, did some scientific experiments, blew the planet up, and so now you have the continents that you have today. But everybody didn't move, you know. Everybody didn't migrate from wherever they were on the planet at the time, which makes sense. And it's why the Moors make sense to me. And Dr. Ben and Dr. Clark even confirmed it because they wrote in one of their two-volume sets that they wrote together. I forget the name of it, but I do have the books in my library where they talked about Africa being Afra-Uika and America being Afmerica or Afmorica. And it makes sense. Because we were still here. We didn't just come in the slave ships. We were already here, too. And you know, those of us who were already here have been completely written out of the history books, which makes no sense because we were the only ones. The landmass was wanted at one time. It makes sense that we were all over the place. Some things just make no sense. To say that nobody was here, or it was only the so-called Native Americans, really? And what's interesting is our people, we don't research, we don't study, and we've got to do that. If you go into the UN, and you'll see so-called Native Americans sitting in the section designed for Native Americans. When Moors walk in, the Native Americans move back some because they know the history that we were the ones here before everybody else. But if you don't go to the UN, you don't go to other parts of the world, you don't communicate with other peoples and other nations and interact with them, then you never get to know anything other than what white folks teach us in their schools. And with a Eurocentric curriculum, it's no way we ever going to learn anything about us. We so well programmed. We argue with people like me who is saying, go check for yourself. I did. You know, go research it yourself. Don't argue with me. I'm just a messenger.
All right. I understand that clearly. Well, very well said.
How we doing on time?
Well, we got about, on the clock, it's about 7:50, so we got like an hour and 10 minutes left. So,
wow.
Yeah.
And I thought he said he could only stay for an hour, so.
Right, so at this point, I'm guessing that we probably won't be have the privilege of having Comrade David Helio tonight, because I was really looking forward to it.
Wow. Are there any callers on the line who might have been looking forward as well?
Yeah, let me see. Well, if there's any callers on the line, all mics are open at this point, so if anybody out there wanted to jump in and discuss what happened, feel free. Yeah, I know we have two callers on the line, but they might not want to join. They may not be willing to join in at this time. We know we just find some people just call in just to listen.
And listen, yeah.
Right, but I want to let them know that their mics are open should they hear anything that stirs an interest and they want to, you know, jump right on in. It's not a problem.
Yeah, I was listening to what Mama Condi was saying, all that valid information that she was giving. That was, you know, we wasn't starving. Like, we, you know, of course we was all looking for the Brother David, but this is some valid information that the sister's providing as well.
No doubt.
Yeah, I think David was there when the party first began. I joined a year after.
Mm-hmm.
And I joined in Philadelphia, and I think he was out in California.
Right.
I could be mistaken. Yeah. I wish he was here to confirm what I'm saying in terms of his part.
Right, I believe he was with the Oakland. I know he was chief of staff and real close with Huey, so I believe he joined the Oakland party.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. So go ahead.
No, I was going to ask Mama Condi, because when she was talking about the original people who signed the treaty, she had mentioned the individual's name who I've had conflicting reports about his history. I was wondering if she could elaborate on what's the science or what's the skinny behind the Brother Ron Karinga.
I know Ron personally. Excuse me. That's my fibrosis scar acting up that I got as a memory of being wrongly incarcerated. Ron, Ron is the founder of Kawaida, Kwanzaa, and the US organization. There was a point when the US organization and the Black Panther Party were in clash. And it's interesting because just a few years ago, Brother Ntume, the musician, the one that has some popular albums out, he was a part of the US organization. And we invited him here in Ohio to speak. And he brought some brothers with him. And even this late date, they still thought that the Black Panther Party sent all them horrible letters that we did not send to them. And I got a chance to just take the brothers in my arms and whisper in their ears and tell them, we didn't do it. That was COINTELPRO. We know that now. We didn't know it then, you know. But we are very clear now. this far into our history, our story. And so even to this late date, there's still healing going on.
Parson, I got the guest.
Beautiful.
I got the elder David Hilly on.
Brother David, welcome to the show. This is Mama Gandhi, Black Panther Party, 1968, Philadelphia. It is good to just be in your presence again.
Well, all power to the people, brother. Glad to hear your voice.
No, I'm a sister.
If you get some cross a conversation, it's because I'm in a little restaurant around the corner from my house. I just walked out the door.
Okay.
But we can just proceed whenever you guys get ready.
Okay. I'm actually ready. Brother. First thing I want to know, tell the people a little bit about your history, your background before we start off.
Can he hear you, Bomani?
Anything you can get me, Don.
You're ordering
some food.
Greens and cornbread. Hello.
Oh, okay. Did you hear me yet? What I just said was, can you tell the people a little bit about your background, how you came up before we started the interview off?
What'd you say, brother?
I said, can you tell the people a little bit about your background, how you came up before we started the interview off?
Can I tell them who I am?
Yeah, tell them who you are, a little bit about your background. Tell them a little bit about who you are.
Well, I'm David Hilliard, one of the founding members of the Black Panther Party in 1966 with me and Huey Newton and Bobby Seale in Oakland, California.
True indeed. Okay, that's good information. Can you tell a little bit more about the position, the duties of the chief of staff? Exactly what the chief of staff is, what your duties were, and exactly what you were doing as a chief of staff?
Well, chief of staff is a title. I was the leader of the Black Panther Party because Bobby Seale's in prison for kidnap. Huey Newton's in prison for shooting a cop leaving my house one night, and I'm the leader of the Black Panther Party.
Yes, sir. Yeah, I understand you organized.
You gotta ask me questions, brother. You gotta ask me questions. I can't.
I understand you organized a Free Huey New Rally, right?
Yeah, I organized everything. I'm David Hilliard. I'm one of the founders of the Black Panther Party. Huey Newton was my childhood friend. I created the Huey Newton Foundation. I created the breakfast program. That's my program. So you gotta ask me questions and not just have me going on and on. You the interviewer.
Oh, true indeed.
Okay,
true indeed. I'm gonna ask you a question, brother. Right. True indeed.
All right, well, let me oppose the question to you, brother. Before you get online, we was having a discussion regarding Maulana Karanga, because there's a lot. Some people say he was an agent provocateur. Some people say he wasn't. So by you having been the one person who was there during that time when Bunchy and John Huckers were murdered, what are your thoughts on Maulana Karanga back then and the other organizations? Were they a group who were compromised by the FBI COINTELPRO or in terms of being actual working for them, or do you think they were just more so manipulated by the COINTELPRO program?
Ginger ale. Hey, brother. All right. Go on, brother. What you saying?
The brother just asked you a question.
Bobby Daly, his brother just asked you a question.
What are your thoughts on Maulana Karanga? There's a lot of controversy that he was a possible, you know, working for the COINTELPRO.
I can respond. Well, Karanga was in a black nationalist organization called United Slaves. And those guys killed one of our guys and another, well, two of our comrades on UCLA campus. They were a cultural nationalist organization, and they killed Bunchy Carter and John Huggins on UCLA campus. That's the essence of that. L.A. is a gang-banging city, and those guys were...
Right, so I mean, do you think that was orchestrated by the FBI's COINTEL program, or was it just a beef that went back to the Slousons and the Gladiators?
L.A. is a gang-banging city, just like Chicago is. And so those guys there, you know, Bunchy and John Huggins was on that campus and got killed by some of Karanga's people who were also guys that come out of L.A. L.A. is a gang-banging city of America, man. And Bunchy and John got killed on that campus with some stupid stuff with that US organization with Ron Karanga. And, you know, some Slauson, who knows? I don't know what the essence of that madness was, except they had a cultural nationalist organization. We had an organization doing food programs, et cetera, et cetera. L.A. is a gang-banging city. That's what they do. They fight each other. They gang. It's a city of gangs.
Okay, a second question I want to pose to you. You know how early on in the Black Panther Party, they took the stance of, you know, armed resistance, you know, pick up the gun and all that type of stuff. Do you feel taking that approach was a mistake, as some people have kind of said it was?
No, it wasn't a mistake, because the police were killing us, especially the ones that Huey Newton got into it when he got the case for shooting one police officer and wounding another. I think there were two police officers, African-Americans, on the police department in my neighborhood during those days. So if you got a lot of white boys that came here from Mississippi and Alabama, and that was the case, because when I used to go home during the summer, I'd see these employment posters in the post office asking white guys from the South to come to California to be on the police department. So we were dealing with the same crackers in the South that the Klan and everybody else engendered, and they were out here in California. Same situation. Man, you got to ask me questions, brother. I said, I'm going to hang up the phone. What are you guys doing?
We have some questions. You have a question, Brother Beaumont?
The question I have, now I read material by a brother named Mark Comfort. What kind of relationship did Mark Comfort have with the Black Panther Party in Oakland? You see it up? See it up, Elder? You hear me?
Still there?
Oh no, I hear him talking in the background. I think he's talking to somebody food or something like that. This shit, hey. Oh man, damn music. Hey, you there, brother?
Okay, so I don't know if the brother dropped off the line or what. Is he on your line, Brother Bomani?
Yeah. He's on my line. The only thing I hear him in the background.